Today I wanted to tell a couple of stories about my family. I was hoping Jacob would not be here, but he is here, so sorry, Jacob. And I guess if there's a title for this, it would be The Trunk of the Tree and the Narrow Path. Trunk of the Tree and the Narrow Path. When we lived in our first house, we raised the four kids. I don't know, what do we have, 800 square foot with six of us in it, a very small house. But the kids loved it. And we had these very, very large pine trees in the side of the yard. And they were probably 70, 80 feet tall, very, very tall trees. And of course, pine trees, the limbs are down near the ground. And we had people over one day. Nevlin was in the house. Talking, believe it or not, and the kids were all, we had other kids over, and they were outside, and I noticed they were in the side yard, and they were all looking up at one of those trees. I thought, uh-oh, so I walk over there, and I see what's happening. I tell Nevlin, she's kind of walking out, because she realizes the kid's like, oh, I said, just go back in the house, please, and walked out and looked out. Jacob was probably 5-6 years old. I don't know how old he was. But he's at almost the very top of one of those pine trees. 60 feet up or something like that. You could see him up there. But and all the other kids, oh, that's awesome. And I'm just thinking, oh, shoot. So calmly, and I knew Nevlin would not be real calm when she first came out there, told him just come back down. Well, he made it back down. He did okay. But he stayed near that trunk of the tree. He didn't climb out on the branches where he would start swaying or the branch could give way and he could break. So he was okay, as okay as Jacob can be, but he was okay. And I also took my wife, before we got married, we were dating. I took her up to where my dad's family had grown up. And it's near where my where the cemetery where my father's buried is. Way up in the woods of Cannon County. And if you take a couple of turns, you end up on just this old gravel road. And it's just full of people who have lived there for generations. And they're mostly our relatives. And they want to know what you're doing up there. Actually, when my dad took my mom for the first time, they stopped him with shotguns on the road, finding out what he was doing up there. Once they found out he was a relative, then they used their phones, and everywhere mom and dad would go by, they would be waving at them knowing they were relatives. So there are places you can go that are not necessarily the straight and narrow road. Is that right? But today I'd like to look at these two, how they connect, the trunk of the tree and what the narrow path represent. And I'd like to examine the tree first, and then we'll look at the narrow path, what those mean in the Bible, and then four ways that Satan attempts to distract us from staying near that trunk of the tree or staying on the narrow path. So let's look at a tree first. And we sing this quite a bit. Our first song is Blessed and Happy is the Man. Let's look at Psalms 1 and verse 3 to start this. Psalms 1 and verse 3 says, "He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper." Now this has very solid roots, a tree like this. Today in construction, it's been going on for a while, many contractors will put something called a Bradford pear out in the yard. Very simple, because it grows extremely fast, and they're very cheap. You don't see a lot of people putting oak trees in their yards today, because oaks are very, very slow growing trees. But there's a difference. An oak is a very strong tree. A Bradford pear, winds come through, you're going to lose limbs, you're going to lose parts of the tree, and it's just not a strong tree. But a big oak tree is going to last. Oak trees live 200, 300, 400, 500 years. They've been through tornadoes, they've been through massive storms. Oak trees are there to last. Now, what kind of tree should we be looking to be on the trunk of? We should want that oak tree, that slow growing, not just that boom, immediate, and then first wind takes it down. Do we not see people that get on the branches of these trees sometimes, get so far away from the trunk? And even though they're still probably following God's way, they tend to get on branches of things that really aren't that important. And in the final verse today, I'll look at what really matters. But they're on things that, yeah, maybe we should look at, but are they that important? We had a man in this church several years. He's not been here for maybe 10 years now. But he was hung up on prophecy a lot. Well, I just don't think this church has it. I think we're just right here at the end, and we don't realize it. Well, he went off in another direction because he thought we were right at the beginning of the 3.5 years. Well, that's over 10 years ago. We're not there. You know, you could get off on these branches where you're swaying, and you're not at the trunk of the tree. There's a church out there right now, a man in one of the churches that originally was part of Worldwide, that he set another date for when the end time is. It's his third time of setting a date. Each time that he sets, he's been wrong. But this one, there's no question, this is what it's going to be. They're off on these branches. They're not on the trunk of the tree. What does God say? That no man knows the time of the end? And yet people, oh yeah, I know. It's hard to debate. What about the sacred names? We can't even pronounce or understand what the pronunciation was from 1,000, 2,000 years ago. And yet, oh, I understand exactly what it is. No, Jehovah and Yahweh, they're the same word. But we don't know how it was actually pronounced, because we don't have that understanding. And yet people get off. If you don't say this pronunciation exactly right, you're off. They're off on these branches. They're off on branches that we shouldn't be. Now, how do you get off on branches like this? Mr. Perryman gave me a book. I think you gave me what I paint houses. Did you give me that book? Okay. But it's a man, and his name was Frank Sheeran. They're about to make a movie. It's going to be a monstrous movie. Jacob, who's the director? Martin Scorsese. Robert De Niro is going to be in it. Al Pacino, Joe Pesci. Typical mob movie that they did. But this guy, Frank Sheeran, tells his story of being in a union. And on his deathbed, he confesses to being the one that killed Jimmy Hoffa. He was the closest person to Jimmy Hoffa throughout their adulthood. The police detectives say, yes, it makes sense that he was the only one that could have done it. Whether he did or not, I don't know. But the guy that helped Frank Sheeran write this book was a lawyer, prosecuting attorney in New York. He was a detective, and he was also a psychiatrist. And he spent the last several years with Frank Sheeran while they were writing this book, and he tried to figure out what made a guy like this, because he killed a lot of people. He had no problem if someone cheated them in a business or they needed to cheat someone with killing someone. And when he says, I paint houses, that meant, that was code word for, yes, I kill people. And Jimmy Hoffa supposedly used him to clean paint houses, I suppose. But he started looking at what made Frank Sheeran Frank Sheeran, because he had a brother or two, and they didn't act the same way. And what he found out was Frank Sheeran spent World War II in the middle of the Battle of the Bulge, several major combat operations. He spent more time than all but two or three people in the entire military in active duty. Where the average person that spent 3 or 4 years over there spent about 80 days in active duty, his was well over 400 days. And when he talked about it, he talked about, after a while, nothing meant anything to him. Killing someone was nothing. So when he came back, he had no conscience like normal people. He considered that just part of everyday life. People sometimes get so far away from what's right that after 4 or 5 years, he didn't even understand what he didn't know the person that he was 4 years before that. So you can get that far away. I'd like to look at 1 Timothy 4 as we still look at getting off on these branches. First Timothy 4 and verse 2. It says, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron. Someone like Frank Sheeran had been doing wrong for so long that he didn't even see it as something wrong anymore. His thought of jail was that was just the price you paid, just like us paying a fine, a toll going down a road. He just considered that part of it. Are there parts of our lives where we're out on that branch and we don't even see that we're wrong? Has our conscience tell a little white lie? Well, that didn't hurt anyone. I can do it again. Are there parts of our lives where we are away from that trunk of the tree and we're on these branches? So a trunk of the tree is one part of this. I'd also like to look at the narrow path. We all know what the narrow path is, but let's go to Matthew 7 verses 13 and 14. Something we know inside and out. Matthew 7 verse 13 says, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go by it, because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. And let's think about how easy it is for us to travel today. We use GPS. It would be very hard for us to use maps. We've gotten so used to that anymore that some voice just tells us to turn here and we turn. But go to an unfamiliar area. Drive down, I don't know, drive 40 out toward West Tennessee. Find some obscure interstate exit. Shut everything off and turn on it. And then make 5 or 6 turns on roads that you come up to. And just keep driving. When you do that, how hard is it to find your way back? It's extremely hard to find our way back. No map, no GPS. We're off on this side road that we don't know where we're going, and it may take us hours to get back. We don't know if we ask a question, like I said, Mom went up there and somebody pulls a shotgun, because we're not supposed to be in that area. We're off on an area that we don't belong on. We're supposed to stay on that path. Now, how do we stay on that path? Well, we've got a GPS. We've got a map, don't we? And it's right here in front of all of us. We stay with that. That is the narrow path. That is the trunk of the tree. We stay on that path. It's very difficult sometimes, very easy to veer off. But we have to remember, stay on that path. So today I'd like to look at 4 ways Satan can deceive us. And he'll take us away from that trunk of the tree. He'll veer us off into an area that we should not be in. He will do all he can to get us away from this tree, to get us off of this road. First way that Satan will do this, he will create a distracting environment. Is there anything going on in the world right now, in this country? It's real easy to get caught up in this political mess. It's very easy to look at social media more than we look at the Bible. What about work? Do we focus too much on work? So much on work that we get distracted from all of these things. They're all a distraction. And they're not God's way. Yes, God wants us to work. Christ was in the world, but he was not of the world. And we're supposed to be the same way. Let's look at Romans 12, verse 2. Romans 12, verse 2 says, "And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." We have no choice but be in this world. But we do have to realize we're not of this world. Look at Christ when he interacted with different people in the Bible. He had no choice but to live in that world. But did you ever see him get deeply involved in it? He was not deeply involved in it. He would condemn certain things. He even said, okay, render to Caesar what is Caesar's. There are parts of this world that we have to interact in. But you did not see him getting deeply involved in turning the church around. No, he set his own ministry. He set his own example. His goal was to live in the world but not be of it. And you just don't see those examples of him getting caught up in the world. It's very easy right now to get caught up in all this political mess that's going on. But if you realize, this has been going on since the first government we ever had. It's just people, human nature, it's going to be this way. But we have to remember, Satan's involved in all this. Christ, what's the bracelet? What would Jesus do? What did Jesus do? You can ask it that way. He stayed out of the world. He lived in it, but he was not a part of it. So Satan's going to distract us with these things that are in the world that we really do not need to be a part of. Second way that Satan will distract us, Satan will use wind to distract us. That sounds kind of strange. But he will use wind to distract us. But he has his own type of wind. Are there not winds of doctrine everywhere right now? And we see these in all the different churches. That these winds will blow us off course. These winds will blow us away from the trunk of the tree. They'll blow us off of the path. Right now, who are the two witnesses? Does anyone know? Can anyone raise their hand and say who the two witnesses are? Well, right now there are hundreds of them and even thousands just in our country that are the two witnesses right now. They're walking around everywhere claiming it. We even have people that started out same beliefs we do that are claiming they're the two witnesses. And they've been that two witnesses for a long time. I haven't seen the powers that those two have, and yet they're claiming to be the two witnesses. When does the 3.5 years of tribulation start? Again, I said there are people that are putting dates on. Oh, it has to be here. It has to be here. And yet those winds of doctrine, people will look at, oh, this is it. This makes sense. This makes sense. No. Have you ever read the first plain truth? The very first plain truth in 1930. Was it 36 or 39? I don't remember. But the very first one. I'm sorry. I'm not bashing Mr. Armstrong here. But in the very first one, I've got it actually in the briefcase back there. He says, there is no doubt whatsoever that we are in that 3.5 years at the end. Brethren, it's almost 100 years later, and we're still not there. These winds of doctrine, this little stuff like this, why are we focused on it? Was Christ focused on that kind of stuff? No, he never gave dates. He never said, he said it's coming, and there's no doubt it is. But he did not set dates the way that we think, oh, I know something other people don't. And that's what I had a friend, not really a friend, but someone I grew up with in school that started coming to church when we were teenagers, he and his brother. And he was different. I guess I'll try to be nice. He was different. But his focus was, I remember in a Bible study, Mr. Weber was there at the time, and he asked during the Bible study this big, deep question: what dimension does God travel in? Who cares? We don't even understand God's way, and yet he's asking something like this. It meant more for him to think of something like that than to really worry about what's in here, what matters. And of course, I had no idea where he is today, but was not focused on the big picture, was focused on something: what dimension does God travel in? Sorry, but that's ridiculous to me. But these winds of doctrine, sacred names. Oh, if you don't say God's name this certain way, you're not going to make it. Again, we have no idea what the written pronunciation or the spoken pronunciation of these words are from that time period. And yet, everyone has it figured out. Brethren, they're getting away from it. These winds of doctrine, these little shifts. Oh, let's jump off of here. We're getting blown off the track with this. We're getting blown off the branches when we do this. Ephesians 4 verse 14 talks about this a little bit. Ephesians 4 verse 14. Just, we better be pretty strong here. Ephesians 4 verse 14. It said that we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men in the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. All of these new doctrines, there's nothing new under the sun, is there? And yet all of these people, oh, I've figured something out that no one else has. Well, good luck with it, because in God's way, he wants one thing out of you, and he's not asking you to be as smart as him. And yet these people consider, oh, if I do this, I'll get more followers. Why do you need followers? Many of them just simply like the rewards of the money and everything else. But these winds of doctrine, do not fall for them. Satan will use these things, even though we think, oh, it's in the Bible. Well, you can sway the Bible any way you want, right? There's not just one church out there. There are multi-thousands of denominations that are out there, because you can sway this any way you want. Third way that Satan will use is Satan will distract us if we take God's protection for granted. Satan will distract us if we take God's protection for granted. And yes, we do know that through faith we rely on God. Psalm 46, verse 1. Psalms 46, verse 1 said, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Most of the time we see trouble coming, right? It develops over time, and then all of a sudden, it's a big problem. When we see it on the horizon, are we asking God then, hey, please guide me on this? Don't just assume, oh, God will take care of it. Yes, we should not worry, but we also need to ask him, hey, see us through this. This is going to be a problem, and see us through it. The whole book of 1 Samuel 28 talks about Saul. And Saul lost God's protection, because instead of relying on God, what did he do when he wanted answers? He got a hold of this medium who he asked for a seance to get a hold of Samuel. And he did that. And what did God do? God tossed him out from underneath his protection. God said, you're going to lose your kingdom. Matter of fact, you've already lost it and you don't know it. And he's going to lose his life because of this. He didn't rely on God when he should have. Now, he saw all the problems, all the wars that he was having to fight. And he could have had Samuel and asked for protection that way. But instead, he relied on something that the Bible talks against. It said, put witches to death, this witchcraft and sorcery, put it to death. And yet, he relied on that. So he ended up losing all of his protection from God because he did not rely on him and ask for his guidance. 1 Peter 4 and verse 12. We can have God's protection all we want, but we're going to be tried, aren't we? 1 Peter 4 and verse 12. It said, "Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you." You know, all the people in the Bible that did exactly God's way, and yet they were tried. If we have something that affects us, it's affected people throughout all generations. Trials are just part of what this life is. And we'll see on the next point that God expects it out of us. When we face trials, God wants us to have those. He wants us to be tempered. And he molds us through that. You talk about pottery and how it's fired and how we're to be molded in his way. But we need to ask God for help when we see these problems coming. Not just assume that he'll get you through it and be like Saul before we know it, or even at the end when it says, "I never knew you, go away from me." We need to have that relationship all the time. Rely on God for protection, but ask for it from him. And the fourth point, and this is one that is very difficult because it happens to us when we're least expected. Satan will attack us unexpectedly. Satan will attack us unexpectedly. Does it not seem like every time things seem to be going great? Everything's working out right now. There's no issues. And then boom, we get hit with something, don't we? And we get hit with something that many times that it's very difficult to overcome. You have to fight through it. Satan will attack us this way. I think everyone in here can give an example that they either have been through or they know of people that have. He'll attack us when we least expect it. And most of the time when everything is going well, isn't it easier to get away from God a little bit? Because we're not relying on him. That's probably the time that we know something's going to happen. Because Satan's going to hit us really hard at that time. Let's go to 1 Peter 1. Peter 1 and verse 7, it says that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. We may be following God's way as well as we humanly possibly can, but we're still going to get hit. Look at Job. You look at Job in the Bible. How many of us can say we're the most righteous man or woman on earth? And God said this to Satan about Job, the most righteous person on earth. How nice would that be that God could say that to us? On the other hand, because of that, what did God do? What did God do? Job 1 and verse 8. Think about how what it said Job had. Job had everything. Job had a family, wife, wealth. Think of a billionaire today that has it all. And then to have this happen. Job 1 verse 8. Then the Lord said to Satan, how scary would this be to think that this could be you? Have you considered Job, that there is none like him on the earth? A blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil. And I'll never forget what Mr. Perryman said about him. You remember what you said about this?
Put him out there like a poker chip.
God threw him out like a poker chip. Tossed him out there just like a poker chip. That's scary to think that that is us. And yet the most righteous man on earth, this is what God did to him. That trial by fire is very important. It may be devastating for us to have something really big happen, something horrific happen in our lives, but it is that trial by fire. Satan will test us any way that he can, these four ways. He'll create a distracting environment. Stay focused. Stay focused on what we're supposed to be. Social media is great. Being aware of world events, they're great. But then you see people that get caught up in that, and then all of a sudden they're setting dates and everything else about the end time. Don't get distracted. He will use these winds. If you see some new doctrine, don't necessarily fall for it. You know, the trunk of the tree is right here. Trunk of the tree. So don't fall for some little side deal. Prophecy is nothing, right? Sometimes. That stuff's not important in the grand scheme of things with God. He'll use those winds. We can't take God for granted. Yes, he will be there for us. When we take baptism, we have God's Spirit. But we need to ask for his guidance as well. It's not just, oh, I have God's Spirit, I'm saved, like most of the world believes. We have to rely on God's Spirit or God's help. We have to ask him. Don't take it for granted. And he's going to attack us. And he's going to attack us very unexpectedly a lot of times. So these four ways, keep these in mind, that trunk of the tree and that narrow path is right here. All right, it's right here. There's no, you can look at all these doctrinal papers from, you can say our church, whatever they are. If it's not in here, it's not a part of God's way. I'd like to look at one final verse, and I always go back to this, and it seems strange when you read the first part of it that's bizarre, but it makes sense because of what Paul says. But when Worldwide started all this mess that they did in the mid-90s, that was the first time I really gave a thought to the church. And I grew up in it. It's just part of it. And all of a sudden, everything that we've been taught was being challenged and said, no, it's wrong. And it's the first time that I actually really got in the Bible and started looking, proving this stuff for myself. Again, I grew up in it, so I didn't come in later. And I came back and back many, many times to this verse. Because they were saying at the time, God's law has been done away with. We're under a new covenant of grace. You accept Christ, and that's all you do. Well, we can't do it without Christ. We know that. But there are some guidelines that God expects out of us. And the final verse, I'd like you to turn to 1 Corinthians 7. I always think of my wife and sharp knives when I go to this, so it scares me as well. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 19. And it says, circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing. And you look at that and say, what in the world? But it's that second part that matters so much. This is Paul. This is the guy that they used to say, oh, everything's been done away with. Grace and there's nothing else. We don't have to keep it. But what's the second half of this verse say? Very plainly, but keeping the commandments of God is what matters. This is New King James Version. But the keeping of God's commandments is what matters. Brother, we could get distracted by the world. We could get distracted by these weird doctrines that people come up with. Are not necessarily weird, just something different. But does it matter? Is it important? Circumcision is nothing. Uncircumcision is nothing. Fill in what you want right there. Because the second half of this is, but keeping the commandments of God is what matters. Prophecy is nothing. Prophecy, or not knowing prophecy is nothing. Because that's not the main focus of what we're supposed to have. That second part of that verse is what matters. But keeping the commandments of God is what matters. Once again, brethren, this is our GPS on the road. This is the trunk of the tree. And no matter where we are, what we look at, this is where our focus should be.